Today on Wings, Women and the Iranian Revolution of 1979. The documentary was produced for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Terms of our license to use it include keeping the host narration from CBC series Ideas.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
I'm Paul Kennedy, and this is Ideas. In March 1979, tens of thousands of women in Iran took to the streets, just weeks after the revolution which overthrew the monarch, Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. They're chanting, "We didn't have a revolution to go backwards." It was 40 years ago, March 8, 1979. Ayatollah Khomeini had just issued a new decree, making the veiling of women mandatory.
The Iranian Revolution was about an idea, freedom, or at least it was supposed to be. Freedom was one of the main rallying cries against the Shah, but here women were less than a month after the revolution, and freedom was still beyond their reach.
Donya Ziayi is a radio producer here at CBC Toronto.
In this episode of Ideas, I'll be talking to three women who were there on the streets of Tehran, fighting against Khomeini's decree, and fighting to take back their revolution and turn the tide of history.
Her documentary is called The Stolen Revolution, Iranian Women of 1979.
I spent the first 12 years of my life in Iran before moving to Canada with my family. Growing up, I'd heard so many stories about women and the revolution, how they'd fought on the streets against the Shah, shoulder to shoulder with the men, or even trained in the mountains as guerrilla fighters. And if I'm honest, I romanticized it. The women of my mother's generation got to be a part of something massive and meaningful. On the other hand, it outraged me that the outcome of their revolution didn't seem to reflect any of the values they'd been fighting for. Meanwhile, the fact that women had led the first collective resistance after the revolution against the Islamic Republic has also been, for the most part, a hidden history. It's completely excluded from the official narrative of the revolution. I wanted to know what drove these women to resist, and how they feel about their revolution now, 40 years later. I started by talking to Minu Jalali.
I'm Minu Jalali. I'm Iranian national, living in London.
Back in the summer of 1978, Minu was studying in England to become a lawyer. And when opposition to the Shah was starting to heat up, Minu and her husband decided to return to Iran. I asked Minu to take me back to the streets with her and describe what those early days of the revolution were like.
Those days were very exciting because we could see the possibilities of having a better country, because we could see that things are changing. I mean, around the university, it was packed until late night. And there were groups of people discussing. There were arguments, there were disagreements, heated discussions. That was fantastic because this is something that we were deprived of for many, many years. There was a defiance in the air, which was beautiful.
What do you think it was that united all of you?
A better future, a fight for getting rid of the dictatorship. And that solidarity every day was growing stronger and stronger and was giving you a strength. Each time you came to the streets and, yes, you were facing danger. You could be arrested. You could be shot at. But you were really powerful in a sense that you knew that you were not alone. And that gives a great strength.
But what a lot of people might struggle to understand is, you know, the Shah's rule had brought these huge advances for women in their legal status, in their education, in their employment. You know, it helped you go abroad to study. As a woman, why would you still oppose him? What were your reasons?
Yes, there were some reforms, but, you know, the reforms only touched very few people. I mean, women were given the right to vote. It would have been lovely if we had a free election and women could vote along the men, of course. But there was no free election as such. And yes, there were rights of education, but there were many women who had no access to universities because of being poor. So yes, there were some reforms, but these reforms were from above, and they did have some effect, some positive effect. One should not deny that, but it was not enough.
So as the revolution was heating up, can you take me to that moment when you really felt that, you know, the hope was at its most powerful for you?
It's very difficult to define it, but I remember there was a big demonstration. I think it was in September, south of Tehran, and it was the first time that the army aimed at demonstrators.
Thousands of anti-government demonstrators clashed with police and soldiers in the Iranian capital of Tehran today, only 4 hours after the government had imposed martial law.
It was a turning point where the army attacked.
An estimated 1,000 persons have died in such disturbances in the past 8 months.
And you could see that people were showing no fear. And it was really amazing to be there and see people trying to help each other if someone was wounded, even with being in danger themselves. So that was the day that I thought that it is possible.
That's really hard for me to imagine, this idea that people had no fear.
Exactly, because we lived with fear so much during the Shah's regime that people expressed that to stand up to the army and to be killed. It was on that day that I thought that it is possible. And the slogans had not yet turned into Islamic slogans.
Which, of course, takes us to December 78, when there were those protests in the month of Muharram, when millions of people took to the streets in support of Khomeini, who was still in exile then.
The rally called for the removal of the Shah and the return of Ayatollah Khomeini, the Muslim leader now in exile in Paris.
You mentioned the slogans. What are some of the slogans you remember from this new period?
I can't remember exactly, but I remember that whenever we said, for example, freedom, democracy, we want democratic rights, we want freedom for women, they would hush us. They would say that, no, 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 let's have some other slogans. We want Islamic Republic, etc. And there were women in those organizations who were very organized, who would come to women who were not wearing hijab and offering hijab to them, not the full hijab, but a scarf, in the pretext that let's be united. Today is that we all be united together.
And you're talking about a head covering.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And I was offered many times a rusari, which is a scarf, and they were inviting me to join them. And I was saying that, but I am here. Why should I wear this scarf?
Even in the progressive atmosphere of the universities, girls exchanged their blue jeans for the traditional veil and prayed before going into the streets to battle the Shah's army.
And is this when the slogan Independence, Freedom, Islamic Republic came about?
Absolutely. Istiqlal, Azadi, Jamhuriye Islami.
And this is really the moment where we're really seeing the rise in Khomeini's popularity.
Yes.
you know, in his interviews in exile, he had said he had no political ambitions and anyways, Islamic rule would respect women's freedom. What do you remember about some of the promises he was making back then?
Yeah, the promises he was saying that he was a spiritual leader and he wants to deal with religious teaching, etc. There was no hint of him being in power. And also, Iran, with the reform of the Shah, having a very sophisticated infrastructure, having a very sophisticated, educated force, etc., nobody believed that the clergy could rule. So people could not see the danger. And that was our naivety. That was a historic naivety of the young who did not have the knowledge. I had a grandmother who every day would remind me and the others of the danger of the clergy and saying that don't be fooled by them. She was adamant. She was not political at all. She would say that you do not know the clergy. You haven't lived under the rule because they had lived under that. They had seen great upheavals and the influence of clergy and their opposition to girls' education, etc. So they all could remember that.
And did you believe her when she would say these things? Or
Yes, I believed what she says. But we thought that we were strong enough to avoid that. And the left in Iran, the idea of left, what I could see around me, I thought that would strong enough to build up a platform around the democratic rights. Of course, we were fearful of America because we thought that America would not leave a country like ours with oil to be free. But I was hopeful that if the revolutionary move continues and if we get some freedom, we will build up an atmosphere and demands around the political and civil rights. This was my wish.
On Wings, this is The Stolen Revolution, produced by Donya Ziai for CBC Radio's Ideas.
The King of Kings leaves the peacock throne in Iran.
By his departure today, he has almost certainly brought to an end the 2,500-year history of the Persian-Iranian monarchy.
Well, in January 1979, a lot of people got their wish, which was for the Shah to leave. He fled, he got in a plane that he piloted himself, and he left. What do you remember about that day?
There was euphoria. People were extremely happy, and there were celebrations all around. And it was unbelievable how we felt. We were so high with joy and thinking that we have done it. But I think by then there were signs also that the danger is there. Because then there was a discussion was that what kind of government we want? What is the next step after Shah?
Well, 2 weeks after that, Khomeini came back from exile and he was greeted by these huge crowds.
This capital hasn't seen anything like it in living memory. It was a genuine people's welcome.
Where were you? Were you there?
I was, but not to go welcome him, but we were all in the streets, yes. And we were discussing that, oh my goodness, what's going to happen now? I mean, I don't know what we were thinking at that time, really, because what we were feeling at the time mostly was joy, that you have reached to a goal. That was a big step. That is what many people, millions of us have dreamed about, that Shah not be there. So it was huge. And the history was forming in front of our eyes, and it was not clear what would be the end of that. It was absolutely not clear, even at that stage.
A sea of excited humanity engulfed a white ranch wagon in which Ayatollah Khomeini rode in the right front seat. Several people were hurt or fainted in the rush to get close to the man regarded by many to be almost a saint.
The wave of crowd was unbelievable, and it was a force that would make you think what's going to happen after this. This was in the mind of every democratic person.
What ended up happening within the first few weeks of Khomeini coming back to Iran? He immediately instituted all these changes that hugely affected women. He repealed the family protection law that the Shah had introduced, and this meant the restrictions on polygamy and temporary marriage were removed. The legal age for girls to get married was changed back to 9, and he also barred women from becoming judges. I mean, as a lawyer, what was it like for you seeing all these changes happen?
It was devastating, but we were somehow confident that they cannot materialize this. They cannot, because there were a lot of resistance against it. The judges could not believe themselves that this can be done. And from the beginning, women showed resistance.
Well, when was the moment for you when you realized that maybe this revolution is actually going to leave women worse off?
Not until the 80s, really. Because the power struggle, the class struggle, and women's struggle was going on. And yes, Khomeini came to power, but he didn't dare to do certain things at the beginning. He could see a wall of resistance that he could not break down. I am of the belief that the outcome of the Iranian revolution was not written by February. I was believing that the democratic forces were quite good in Iran. The idea of the left was strong, but the body of the left, the organization of the left, was very small.
The Ayatollah condemned the young Marxists who had helped him seize power as enemies of the revolution. The Fedayeen feel betrayed. Their guns and their fighting helped banish the Shah and bring the Ayatollah home from exile. But today the street fighters were reduced to shouting for reforms.
I think the Khomeini came directly as a result of Shah's dictatorship, because no independent political organization existed. No free press existed. And the Shah's aim was to oppress the left, because he always thought the danger is from the left. And he did not really touch the clergy at the grassroots. If we had time, if the revolutionary period could linger on for a year or so, maybe we had a different scenario. I don't know. But at that time, there were potential for other possibilities. But unfortunately, we lost that opportunity. And Iran lost a golden opportunity also. And we have gone back in the history.
Minu, does it feel like the revolution, your revolution, was stolen from you?
It was hijacked, yes. It was hijacked. My revolution was hijacked by the conservative and anti-democratic forces and the clergy. Yes, I can say that. And I am sorry for that, and I regret it. And there is nothing that one can do except having faith in the Iranian people that their struggle, which has been shown over the last 40 years, especially women's struggle, that flame of resistance has never died out. It was like a kind of carnival. People had gone to many garrisons and bringing all sorts of weapons out, even two tanks that were brought to the Tehran University.
Haideh Daragahi was a professor of literature at the time of the Iranian Revolution. She now lives in Sweden. In the last days of the revolution, she joined thousands of other Iranians demonstrating on the streets.
The scenes were amazing. And there would be cars passing by. There was a girl with half her body out of the window holding a gun. There was a woman in high heels conducting the traffic because there were no policemen present. These were the people who are on the streets.
There is so much ammunition available, the sky is being used for target practice.
And I remember a father actually explaining to his, 8-year-old son how to make a Molotov cocktail. And the son was watching all ears, you know. Nothing was the way it was before. And everybody knew that the situation had changed.
The Shah was gone, Khomeini had returned, and the future of the country was still uncertain. It was a time of confusion and fear, especially for women.
Good evening. Iran's brief civil war is over, and Islam is the victor. The country's powerful army gave up the struggle after 40 hours of street battles. Army leaders say they'll obey the will of the people.
In February 1979, the army finally declared its neutrality and the revolution was declared over. For many women, the fall of the Shah meant the opportunity to organize freely for women's rights. Under the Shah, all independent women's organizations had been banned, and so were all celebrations of March 8th, International Women's Day. But several women's groups were determined to organize celebrations commemorating both Women's Day and their defiance of the Shah. Haideh was one of those organizers.
We were going to celebrate 8th of March freely and publicly for the first time in Iranian history. And there were at least 8 different things going on. We were going to have a meeting related to women's rights at the Ferdowsi Hall, which is the biggest venue at Tehran University. And because I was a professor, I had reserved that hall for our event. 2 very good friends who were first-year students at the Fine Arts Faculty. They had made a very, very beautiful poster of a woman turning her head, and in the front was barbed wire that the movement had broken, and the slogan was, "Women's freedom is a measure for freedom in society." And we had planned with a group of women who were actually part of all left groups that I cooperated with, and I was one of the speakers. There were other speakers. That was what we had planned.
But these plans would change. On March 6th, newspapers announced that all co-ed schools in Tehran would be dissolved in the new school year. And then, on March 7th, just one day before the Women's Day celebrations, Ayatollah Khomeini decreed that women now had to wear the veil in government offices, or, in his own words, to not enter them, quote, naked. That same evening, the newly seized Iranian TV network announced that all participation in the, quote, imperialistic and foreign celebration of Women's Day is un-Islamic. What were meant to be celebrations of Women's Day were about to turn into massive protests.
A large crowd of women and a small number of male sympathizers gathered outside the heavily guarded office of Prime Minister Mehdi Bazigan to demonstrate for equal rights under the new Iranian regime.
Tens of thousands of women gathered in Tehran on the morning of March 8th outside the new prime minister's office, while another 3,000 went to protest in the religious city of Qom, where Khomeini was staying.
But it's clear that efforts to establish a permanent Islamic republic have run into trouble on several fronts, and one of those is the women's rights movement.
That same day, Haider and her colleagues held a meeting.
You know, there were so many people who wanted to come in that we had to close the doors at a certain point. All the seats were taken and all the standing up places were occupied. So we had to close the door. And I think I was the second or the third speaker when I noticed the commotion at the entrance. And when I went there, these women, a lot of them, had pushed the door open. They were wet, they were cold, and they were very angry. And they said, "You are holding a meeting here. Come out and see what they are doing to our march on the street." That was the end of that meeting. Everybody, including myself, left that room. And we wanted to get out to see what they were doing to these people. They told us that they had attacked their demonstration. You know, on that day in Tehran, it was snowing, and the gutters, very wide ones, were filled with ice and snow. They had pushed them into the gutters. They had driven minibuses into their lines. And some of them said that they had pushed them to cul-de-sac, you know, blind alleys, with their backs against the wall, and they had taken out their penises and they had told them, "You want freedom? Come and get it."
Oh my God.
We knew we have to go and see, to join them, you know, join the demonstration. When we came out, the main entrance of Tehran University is a big gate and there are two side entrances. They had locked these doors. These Hezbollahis, these thugs were standing there. I and I think another woman, we climbed the gate and I screamed at them. I said, "Is this the freedom for which we all demonstrated and suffered and paid? Is this your understanding, your version of the freedom?" And you know, not everybody at that particular moment was sold out to the regime. So they looked at each other. And they opened the gates. And you have no idea how many people were already there, because all over the place they were discussing the question of women.
You've been listening to the documentary The Stolen Revolution, Iranian Women of 1979. Tune in next week to hear more from Haida about Iranian women's resistance against mandatory veiling and in defense of their revolution. You'll also hear from one of the many women's rights activists who continued the fight against the Islamic Republic beyond those early days, and at great personal cost. Thanks for listening.
A one-hour version of The Stolen Revolution, produced by Donya Ziyai, can also be found at cbc.ca/radio/ideas. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Thank you to all Wings supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the new book, Societies of Peace, Matriarchies, Past, Present, and Future. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.